Firstly, I should say that it's really great to be involved in this session because I was a kind of late addition and a substitute. But when Mark mentioned it was going to happen, this event today, I kind of immediately said, yeah, I'll do it, even though I hadn't planned to or prepared to. I should say, I studied at Goldsmiths College in London in the 1980s. And at that time, it was really a kind of a unique sort of environment to encounter the world of ideas and also to encounter Mills, because this book, actually, my copy of Sociological Imagination, was given to me by an amazing teacher called Caroline Ramazanoglu, who was, some of you may remember Caroline. She was a kind of important figure in feminist sociology, now retired. And I remember the day that she gave me that book. She said, you know, read this, it will help you. So I read it, and it did. But then it was many years later that I really kind of went back to Mills, and I've been thinking about him a lot in the last few years, because I bought the book which his daughter Catherine Mills edited, of his letters and his autobiographical writings. And one of the things that really caught my imagination about that book was, you know, Mills died at a very young age. His daughters were also very young when he died. And the thing that was so extraordinary about that book to me was it was almost as if Catherine Mills, as a middle-aged woman, was trying to get to know her father and the kind of audience that he had, the kind of things he cared about. But in that book, there are all kinds of incidental insights into his craft as a writer, as a thinker, as a sociologist, as well as the kinds of things that he was trying to imagine as different forms and modes that sociology might take inside and outside of the academic discipline. And what I've been trying to do for, I guess, the last year or two is to try and write a kind of modern equivalent or a contemporary equivalent of the first chapter of the Sociological Imagination, which I'm sure all of you will remember is called The Promise. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that and make a few points, but mainly I want to try and connect that idea of the promise of sociology with the kind of nature opportunities for us to imagine what's at stake in our craft now. Now, a promise is an interesting thing, isn't it? Because in a way, a promise looks two ways. It looks to the past, but it also looks as a call to the future. And I think in a way, that's why Mills' thought is so relevant to us still, because it is a kind of passionate call to the future. You know, when he wrote The Sociological Imagination, he was on a Fulbright Fellowship at the University of Copenhagen, 1956-57, I think, during that academic year. He'd actually applied to be based at the LSE. But either the letter was never sent, or it was never opened. He ended up at the University of Copenhagen. And initially, the book was going to be called Autopsy of Social Science. Autopsy. You know, in many respects, and this comes through in Daniel Geary's wonderful intellectual biography of Mills, that he wrote the book because of his conviction that American sociology had broken its promise and resulted in the grand theory of Parsons or the abstract empiricism of Lazarsfeld. In a way, Mills was trying to kind of inaugurate or create a discipline around his own interests and fascinations. Now, in the reception of that book had a very kind of cool response in Britain, particularly in the pages of the British Journal of Sociology. I want to send this paper to them, actually. Their reviewers summarised that Mills seems to have become the intellectual hero to a youthful section of the British political community. It must be reported, however, that he has little importance in contemporary American sociology. Although, grudgingly, it's acknowledged in the review that he was one of the bestsellers in terms of sociological writers outside of the field. He's characterised less as a kind of public intellectual in the way that we've been listening to, but more as a kind of media don, I think, a kind of contemporary equivalent of Naomi Klein, perhaps. Now, Mills wrote this kind of incredible critique of the power elites, you know, the kind of damage of white collar work and of American consumerism in the middle of the 20th century. But the book, Sociological Imagination book, is dedicated to Harvey Suedos and Beth Suedos. And Harvey Suedos, who was a novelist, wrote a beautiful piece, not always a very kind of glowing portrait of Mills after he died. But one of the things that Suedos says about him, he didn't like the book that had been dedicated to him, it has to be said. One of the things he said, which it really struck me, he says this in his kind of reflection on his friendship with Mills after he passed away. For a long time, I've thought, I still do, that it was because, oh sorry, I should prefix this by saying that, you know, he talks a little bit about Mills' detractors in the passage before this quotation. So he writes, for a long time I've thought, I still do, that it was because people were responding to him, not merely as a logical indictment of what could be upheld or attacked, but they were responding to him because he had a poetic vision of America. An unlovely vision, perhaps, expressed with a mixture of awkwardness and brilliance, but one that did not need statistical buttressing or findings of research teams in order to be apprehended by sensitive Americans as corresponding to their own sense of what was going on about them, more truly and more unflinchingly than any other contemporary statement. The vision of Wright Mills cut through the fog and lightened their lives for them. And there's something about that, I suppose, in terms of what I want to kind of value, hold on to, live with as a kind of warrant for sociology and a kind of promise that we should perhaps try to sustain in our time as we move forward. A way to envision life that is both recognisable, comprehensible, yet re-articulated through living in books, concepts, and theories. Now, I mean, I'm mindful that time is short and I want to kind of cut to the chase in a way. I mean, I think there's something about Mills' legacy and his emphasis and his kind of commitment to the imagination, to movement, to imaginative movement, the scale from biography to history, from the close at hand to the elsewhere, that I think is so powerful. But it's not just that, I think, and I'm sure many of you have dwelt on those passages about the imagination in this book. It's not just that, I think, that's so crucial in our time. Maybe it was not quite the same in his. But it's also his emphasis in the way that he articulates the craft on critical judgment. On critical judgment. He says, let every man and woman be his or her own methodologist. Let every man and woman be his or her own theorist. Let theory and methodology, and methods, sorry, again become part of the practice of the craft. Now, you know, perhaps one of the key differences between Mills' time, between 50 years or 60 years ago, or maybe 100 years ago, and our time, is that I suppose the kind of early movement of sociology was committed to try and finding tools and repertoires to investigate and make comprehensible the social. Yeah. The importance of generating a different kind of telling about society, as Howie Becker would say. But maybe the difference about our time is that rather than trying to kind of justify what we do and the promise of sociology is giving you a tool bag to kind of investigate and know the social, perhaps what's going to be crucial in our century is the capacity that sociology gives us to weigh, judge, interpret, and make sense of data and information that's been produced in human society at an unprecedented frequency and scale. Yeah. Maybe that's that's the difference, actually. In a sense, the kind of disposition, the vocation that is enshrined within Mills seems so kind of, not explicit, but tacitly about being suspicious about the kind of allure or the spell of technique. Yeah. Rather, it's a sensibility. And John and I have actually talked about this before. The cultivation of a sort of sensibility and a disposition, a vocation in thought. He says, understand in practice that you never start working on a project. You're always already working on a project, whether it be in the personal vein or the files that you open and so on. That's sort of, you know, the enlivening, that sort of re-enchantment, I suppose, and the opening of our experience through this imaginative disposition and craft. So that's my second point about vocation. The third one, you know, Mills says, and in some ways, in many respects, practices the idea that the sociological imagination isn't confined to or organised within the institutions of sociology as a discipline. He seems to be gesturing to all kinds of vernacular forms of sociology in his work. And that's the thing that really caught me my imagination in the second book. You know, he started writing this book, which was a kind of an imaginative correspondence with another intellectual on the other side of the Iron Curtain. Listen, Yankee, we've also heard about before, a book that's written in the voice of a Cuban revolutionary, which was his undoing, in fact. But, you know, there's something about the way in which Mills, the promise of sociology to imagine not only different kinds of forms, but maybe to constitute sociological publics, which is kind of very inspired by Michael's intervention around public sociology, but also maybe there's another way to think about the constitution of sociological publics in a way that might be a different sort of mode of dialogue and sociological production outside of the discourse about impact and relevance and the like. The last thing I want to say about Mills, before I shut up, and read you a very short passage to end, is that there's something I think in Mills that is very powerful and important in his attempt to kind of hold on to a sense of the bigger picture, of the larger historical scope, you know, the quality of human diversity in his time and in ours. I mean, it's actually kind of, it's only partly formed in the corpus of his thought, I think, a sense of a kind of worldly sociological imagination. But I think that is, again, one of the things that I find so compelling in him. Anyway, I wanted to read you a very last short passage and leave the last words to him. He says at the very, very end of the sociological imagination, do not allow public issues as they are officially formulated, or troubles as they are privately felt, to determine the problems that you take up for study. Above all, do not give up your moral and political autonomy by accepting, in somebody else's terms, the illiberal practicality of the bureaucratic ethos or the liberal practicality of the moral scatter. Caroline was right. It's a book that helps you.